Shortest year I've ever heard.
Here,
are you ready? Started? I wanted to share with you one of the more famous sugyot, one of the famous pieces of the Gemara that deals with the issue of, well, what I would call the issue of Yom HaAtzmaut. People, it's difficult to describe. I guess my first interaction with Yom HaAtzmaut, even when I grew up in a Zionist household, and I think we celebrated in the shul, but it didn't mean anything to me. Meaning to me in a personal way, until I came to it was always like sort of like pseudo July 4th, I guess, for us. You know what July 4th means? I mean, you know, it's a
different.
Yeah. So have I, you know. And it was a nice day. It was fun. You know, they had falafel and the whatever, but it didn't really have a meaning to me until the year I came to Israel and I was in Yeshiva Shalvim, and it was an eye-opening experience for me. It was just a very meaningful that we celebrated Yom HaAtzmaut the exact same way, almost identical to the way that we celebrated Purim. There was a meal, and there was dancing, and it was a religious experience. It wasn't just, you know, a day with a tekes, but it was really a religious experience. Something that I feel is a little bit missing here, not entirely, because you have the tefillah chagigit. It's very important, and no matter what I did in America, to try to impress upon the people. We had a tefillah chagigit, and it always drives me crazy, because if you do it the right way, there's always like this Yom HaZikaron, and then right into Yom HaAtzmaut. That's the way we got the people. But half the people wouldn't come in from Maariv, because they never died in Maariv or whatever. You try to explain, no, this is like a chag. And it didn't never translated properly. Whereas we're here, it really is. You know, you'll come to shul on Monday night, and everybody will be dressed in white, and it's a tefillah chagigit, it's a celebration. So the question I'd like to share with you, or the issue I'd like to share with you, is, are there any sources to suggest that this is a religious thing, or is this something that we all just intuitively know? Like, how should we suggest that this is actually an event of religious significance? So between you and me, I feel it's relatively intuitive that for the Jewish people to have been returned officially to their natural God-given homeland for the first time in 2,000 years demands a religious expression. But if that's not enough for you, there's a Gemara. Okay, there's a very, very famous piece of Gemara, and based upon which, and based upon certain opinions, certain opinions on the Gemara, I believe very strongly suggests that there is such a thing. There is a religious significance. You know, and whether you say halal or not, then you could ask your local Orthodox rabbi. So the very famous Gemara, many of the famous Gemara that talk about the land of Israel, the significance of the land of Israel, are at the end of Masechet Ketubot. Because Masechet Ketubot deals with, obviously, the Ketubah, and the situations in which a husband can divorce his wife, or doesn't have to pay her if he divorces her, and vice versa, or has to pay her if he divorces her. And one of the issues that comes up is, I don't know if any of you had this issue, but what happens if the wife wants to make Aliyah and the husband doesn't want to make Aliyah? Or the other way around. What happens if the husband wants to make the Aliyah and the wife doesn't? So the Mishnah says, if he wants to go and she doesn't, he can divorce her and he doesn't have to pay the ketubah. And if she wants to go and he doesn't, she can, I guess, insist on a divorce and she gets her ketubah. Okay, so meaning, according to the Gemara, according to the Mishnah, it's very clear that the person who wants to live in Israel is in the right. And the one who doesn't because he's afraid he won't get a job, well, nuts on him, you know, too bad. Just, I will point out, there's a very famous, one of the founders of Rehovot. If you ever take a tour of Rehovot, one of the founders of Rehovot is a lady who left her husband. She was in Russia. She said, I want to move to Israel. And he said, I'm not moving to Israel, you're crazy. And she left her husband and made Aliyah to Rehovot, and she's one of the founders of Rehovot. There's a fascinating, you must never hear of stories like that, of women who say, I have to look up her name, I'll Wikipedia it, you know, we'll figure it out, because it's like a well-known woman who's one of the founding families of Rehovot. There's like plaques if you ever know where to look in Rehovot. It's very interesting. Okay, so the Gemara says, so the Gemara is discussing all of these things and goes through some of the wonderful comments or laudatory comments about living in Israel. For example, I don't know if you ever heard this one. This is my favorite. One second, says the Gemara. Tan Rabbanan, said the rabbis, La'olam yadur adam be'eretz Yisrael. Person should always live in Eretz Yisrael. Afilu be'ir shiruba ovdei kochavim, even if it's a city that's mostly non-Jewish. Al yadur b'chutz la'aretz, and don't live in chutz la'aretz. Afilu be'ir shiruba Yisrael, even if it's a majority of Jews, like Pittsburgh, okay? Right? Why? Shekol hadar be'ir Eretz Yisrael domer kemi sheyesh lo Eloha. Whoever lives in Israel, it's as if he has a god. V'chol hadar b'chutz la'aretz domer kemi she'ein lo Eloha. And if you live in Chutz La'aretz, it's as if you have no god. And what I find most fascinating about this Gemara is this was written by Babylonians. I know, Talmud Bavli. They wrote this. Anyway, so skip. So Gemara tells an interesting story about wanting to move to Israel. So Gemara says, Rabbi Zeira ha become ishtamit minei de Rabbi Yehuda. Right, Rabbi Zeira was avoiding Rabbi Yehuda. Why was he avoiding Rabbi Yehuda? Debay lemesek la'aretz Yisrael, because he wanted to make Aliyah. But he had a problem. Rabbi Yehuda, who was, I guess, his Rebbe, or, you know, like the Macher of the time. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda would say, Kol ha'olem mi bavel la'aretz Yisrael over ba'aseh. Says, you're not allowed to move to Eretz, you can't make Aliyah, it's a violation of an Aseh, because it says, Shne'emar, Bavela yuv'u v'shama yu adyom pakdi etchem ne'um Hashem. Because in the Navi it says, that when the Jewish people, Yirmiyahu said, I'm going to kick you out of Eretz Canaan, and you will be kicked out to Bavel, and you have to stay there until I redeem you, so saith the Lord, that's what God says. Now, of course, it was only talking about, Yirmiyahu was talking about which exile? The first one. And the Jewish people were returned back by Koresh, but I guess, what was he waiting for? Who would you come, Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda was, what would you associate Rabbi Yehuda with today?
Neturei Karta?
No, Neturei Karta is a little much. Yeah, Neturei Karta, but Satmar, really. Satmar. Right, with Satmar, meaning you don't have any right to do anything. Even if God gives you, right, even if God invites you through the nations of the world to go rebuild the land of Canaan and gives it you the base of Mikdash on a silver platter, that doesn't mean anything. Right? Because why? Because it has to be some miraculous kind of salvation. So that was Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, and Rabbi Zeira was making Aliyah, and so he basically avoided Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? It didn't go well. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, so Rabbi Zeira, so what does Rabbi Zeira do with the Pasuk? How could he make Aliyah? How dare you make Aliyah if there's an explicit Pasuk that says you can't? The Gemara says, Rabbi Zeira, ube klesha reiktiv. I don't know, Yirmiyahu was not talking about people, he was talking about the vessels, the utensils of the Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Yehuda, he says, no, he says, okay, you're right, that's true. It's talking about the Beit HaMikdash, but he says, Kra Ktiv Kra Achrina. I have another Pasuk. This is a Pasuk from Shir HaShirim. Very cryptic Pasuk. As we all know, Shir HaShirim is an allegory. It's a love story between the Ra'ya and the Dod, but the Chazal interpreted it to have historical meaning, to have contextual meaning. Hishbati etchem benod Yerushalayim b'tzva'ot o ba'ilot ha'sadeh. I swear, the Ra'ya says to the benod Yerushalayim, says to her cohorts, I make you swear, right? Bitzvaot, the Lord of hosts, O Ba'ilot HaSadeh, the rest of the Pasuk is, Im Ta'iru, Im Tit'oberu, Et Ha'ava, Ad She'techbatz. I make you swear that you do not awaken the love. You should not arise our love, Ad She'techbatz, until it's time. So meaning, leave it alone, don't do anything. So he says, there's an oath, there's a shvua. He made the Bnei Yerushalayim take a shavua not to rekindle the love until the guy wants, until he calls me back. Okay? So that what does that obviously mean? It means we don't rekindle the love, we the Jewish people don't rekindle the love with God until God calls us. Hashtechbatz. Rabbi Zeira says, no. Hahu, that is teaching us, Shelo Ya'alu Yisrael Bechoma. A very important phrase. Very, very important phrase. Shelo Ya'alu Yisrael Bechoma. Anybody want to help me translate that? What is it?
So they go up the wall.
That they don't Ya'alu Yisrael Bechoma. Right. They don't go up the wall. Yeah, well, it's a critical phrase. Rashi actually doesn't explain what it means. I'm sorry. Shelo Ya'alu Bechoma Yachad Biyad Chazaka. Together by force. So we don't go up the wall by force. Together. Rabbi Zeira, who was making Aliyah, agreed. He said, no, I agree with that point, but I still think that's what it says not to do. It doesn't tell me not to make Aliyah. It doesn't tell me not to move to Israel. The Gemara continues. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Hishbati achrin akhi. There's another Hishbati. Rabbi Zeira says, no. Ha'omi bari lechad Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehud, Rabbi Chinina. A very famous Gemara, Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Chinina. De Amar Gimel Shavuot Halalu Lema. What are these three Hishbatis? I make you take an oath. What are they for? What are the Gimel Shavuot? What are the oaths that the Ra'aya makes the Benot Yerushalayim take? What are these oaths? Achat Shelo Ya'alu Yisrael Bechoma. One, that Yisrael should not go up bechoma, by force. Just, I'll explain to you. There's a commentator called the Megillat Esther. We'll see in a second. Very famous commentary. I'll explain to you what he talks about. He says what this means is, you're not allowed to take, the Jewish people may not take the land of Israel by force. That's one oath. We took an oath. V'achat, number two, Shishbiya HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Yisrael, Shelo Yimrudu Be'umot HaOlam. God made us take an oath. We will not rebel against the nations of the world. V'achat, and the third one is, Shishbiya HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Ovdei Kochavim, Shelo Yishtabdu Be'Yisrael Yoter Midai. We make the nations of the world swear that they won't subjugate us too much. They can subjugate us, but just not too much. Okay, and then the Gemara goes on. There's a little bit more in the Gemara, but that's the essential part. So there are these three oaths that it seems that both Rabbi Zeira agree to Rabbi Yehuda. One of them, of course, being Shelo Ya'alu Bechoma. So how is it that we're sitting here in Yad Binyamin? We're religious Zionist people.
Say that that oath was abdicated because of the Hitler.
Very good. Okay, so let me ask the question first, and then we'll start with the answers. Okay, so the first thing you have to say is, like, we have to ask ourselves, we are Talmud-oriented people. We're religious-oriented people. We believe in the importance of the Talmud. So Talmud seems to say we took an oath. And if we took an oath, do we have the gall to break such an oath? So, just so you should know, this is one of the primary arguments of a man named Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, who wrote a book called Vayoel Moshe, that you've all heard of, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, otherwise known as? Samurai. Samurai, right. Okay, if this is all review for you, that's all that's good, I guess. It's always good to review. Okay? So, how do we... So, he says, the Gemara says, the Shalosh Shavuot, the Rabbi Zeira agrees with Rabbi Yehuda, and this is, by the way, the Samurai Rav took it even farther. Just so you know, the Samurai Rav said, the reason for the Shoah was because of the Zionist enterprise. Why? Because the Gemara continues. The Gemara says... I'll just read you the last line, it's very important. He says, Yishpati etchem bitzvaot o ba'ailot hasadeh, with hosts and or with the ayalot, the rams of the field. Amar Rabbi Lazar, said Rabbi Lazar, Amar lem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, said God to the Jewish people, Im atem mekayimim et hashvu'ah mutav, you keep the oath? Great. Ve'im lav, ani matir et besarchem kitzvaot ba'ailot hasadeh. I will, matir et besarchem means, rend your flesh, rip your flesh, permit your flesh. Difficult thing. It doesn't sound good. Like the rams of the field. It says the Satmar Rav, the Gemara says that's what's going to happen. Right? You break the oath, and he says that's what happened. Now, ironically, so, you know, I'm not in favor generally of trying to give reasons and say the Holocaust was because of this, the Holocaust was because of that. Ron Lichtenstein, he actually said, he wrote it again recently. There was an article I saw him quoted in, who he said he finds it to be an act of, how should we say this, a spiritual hubris for someone to suggest that without prophecy he knows the reason for any kind of calamity. Mm-hmm. To say that this calamity happened because of this, or that happened because of that. We're not prophets anymore, we don't have prophecy. But that's what Satmarov said. Just so you know, okay, somebody also said the exact opposite. Right? Who said the exact opposite? Did we learn it? I don't know if we learned it. In the book. In the Nesmecha. Right. If you ever read the Nesmecha. He said, why was there a Holocaust? Because the Jews didn't go to Israel. Now, actually, he has a more technical argument. He didn't make this. He made it. He said it was spiritual. But his more technical argument was that if everybody had gone to Israel, then there wouldn't have been anybody to kill in Europe. But that's, that's not really his argument. His argument is more.
The rabbis fell.
Yes, he did. But he says it, he blames it, he says, whatever. Anyway, so how do we deal with this Gemara? We have a Gemara that seems to say, we're not supposed to be here. So how do we deal with this Gemara? What are we supposed to do? Mr. Americus.
Those.
Right?
Yes.
Said, suggested. Yeah. Right? That, well, there's three oaths. One of the oaths is that the nations of the world shouldn't subjugate us too greatly. And the Nazis didn't really keep to their side of the deal. So if that deal is off, then our deal is also off, and we should be able to conquer the land of Israel. There's only one problem with that. You know what problem I have with that? Who said that our oath is tied to their oath? There are three oaths. We have oaths, and they have oaths. That sounds like my children when they say, well, they didn't do it, so why should I do it? Well, like, you know, who says? Because they're not keeping the rules, and you're not supposed to keep the rules.
I viewed it as a contract.
What's that?
I viewed it as a contract.
The Talmud does not suggest that they're mutually, connected.
Loyal citizens, they agree to treat us so we can survive. We'll pay our taxes and be loyal citizens instead of an army, and we won't rebel against the country. That they're not allowed to.
Okay. So I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't suggest in the text that there is that kind of contract.
Right here.
Okay. So the most common and the most famous answer suggested by the Avnei Nezer, the Or Sameach, the Maharsha, Rav Nachman Mendel Kasher. Rav Kasher wrote the Torah Shlema. Okay. And a bunch of others, Rav Teichtel as well, a bunch of others, Rav Herzog, they say the following. They say, of course we're not allowed to. According to the oaths, we're not permitted to ya'alot b'choma, to rise up and conquer in force. Is that what we did? How did we achieve the land of Israel? Did we take the land by force?
Yeah.
That's right.
No, the Balfour Declaration.
First
the San Remo Conference.
San Remo Conference and the Balfour Declaration. But ultimately what gave the Jewish people...
The British basically turned it over.
That's right. We did live here. We didn't conquer the land by force. When did we have to use force?
To defend ourselves.
To defend ourselves when we were attacked and threatened with annihilation. So it's ironic and fascinating, though, to note that you have these shvuot in the Gemara. You would have thought, how are the Jews going to get the land back? Ultimately, how are we going to get it back? The same way we got it the first time. We're going to have to conquer. We're going to have to take it. But interestingly, it's an eerily, you know, prophetic vision of the Gemara. The Gemara says, you're not allowed to take it by force. And we didn't. Yeah.
Because always this kind of always bothered me. So how do you, the Shtachim and things that happened after 67, those we did take by force. Those and UN has not, no one has recognized them as giving it to us. Does that cause any kind of problem in your argument?
Well, the question is, is that part of the Shavuah once you have Eretz Yisrael?
Is that how you answer it? Is that the answer?
Well, I would say two things. First of all, in 67 when we took this, yeah, we were also defending ourselves.
It wasn't our fault.
Right. That was also us. We didn't attack. Right. We didn't want to give it back afterwards, but we had no intention of, you know, we didn't attack and we weren't going to attack. You know, that's one. Number two, I think there's a huge difference between the initial conquest. That's one. Number two. So if you feel that these Shavuot are binding, that they're binding upon us, and that they have significance, then the fact that the Shavuot were, you know, circumvented in a sense by the fact that it was given to us by the nations of the world, thereby legitimating our presence here according to the Gemara, that's a religiously significant event. Because if I can't take it, then the only thing that can become mine is if somebody gives it to me. So if somebody gives it to me, that legitimates it. Everybody understand what I'm saying? That happened. You want to say it didn't happen on the day of the Declaration of Independence. So maybe the day of celebration, the religiously significant day, would be, well, November, what is the street?
29th.
What?
29th.
The 29th of November, what have you. But nonetheless, the idea of the taking control, which I think is what the Yom HaTzimut really represents, that in itself has a religious significance, if you accept the Gemara. That would be my argument. And I really believe that it's religiously significant because the Gemara says you can't do it the other way, and that's how we did it. That's one answer. Anyway, number two, the second answer that they suggested by Rav Shlomo Kluger, Rav Friedman, Rav Meir Kahana, and others said they didn't keep their kind of the deal. Why should we keep ours? Okay. Others suggest. I want to explain the term Olam HaChoma, by the way, because it's just a very important term. There's a very, very, very famous discussion of the Rambam, the Sefer HaMitzvah. The Rambam counts the mitzvahs, and he doesn't list selling the land of Israel one of the mitzvah. So the question is, why not? And the Zionists, we go to town on this and explain all the different logic in the Rambam. But so the Ramban has a sort of a gloss on the end, the back of the mitzvah. The back of the Sefer HaMitzvah, the Ramban writes a little book called The Mitzvah the Rambam Missed. Right? The you know, the ones that he forgot to mention that he's wrong about. And in there, number four is, of course, this mitzvah to sell the land of Israel. So on that commentary of the Ramban, of Nachmanides, There's a commentator called the Megillat Esther, and he says, and he defends the Rambam. He says, now the Ramban is wrong. It's not that the Rambam forgot to count the land living in the land of Israel. He said the reason the Rambam didn't count living in the land of Israel is because of this Shvuah. Shalom, yeah, it's asr la'alot b'choma. You're not allowed to conquest the land of Israel. So the Rambam said, it can't be a mitzvah if you're not allowed to do it. So he didn't count it in the list. So that's why we have to deal with this idea of not going after the land of Israel. So we have two answers. One, we got it. It was given to us. Great. Two, deals off. I'll give you just a few more. Okay. Number three, the Vilna Gaon says, what is lo ya'alu b'choma? I find this assertion quite compelling. Choma means? What's that?
Wall.
I have always believed this is the meaning of the term. What is lo you to go up by force over the wall? What wall? What wall do we have? We only have one wall. Right? So it didn't matter. They didn't call it the Kotel. What did they call it? They called the Choma. I always believed, and I don't know if the Gra is saying this, I think he might be saying this, that it wasn't that we were forbidden from coming to the land of Israel, but that what are we forbidden from doing without divine intervention? Building the Beit HaMikdash. We are forbidden from building the Beit HaMikdash. There's a difference, and even the Tosfos, I don't remember where, they allude to this idea. There's a huge difference between settling the land and then building Bayit Shlishi. Bayit Shlishi will come when we're ready for it to come, and when we prepare the world, and we prepared ourselves for it to come. So that was the Shavua, that was what we're forbidden to do. But anything less than that, and I always found this much more compelling, the commentary of Shelo Ya'alu B'choma, to suggest that that means, it doesn't sound like it means you're not allowed to take the land of Israel by force. Like, what wall? Where's the wall? The wall between Babylonia and here? Was there a wall that everybody knew about? I don't know. Why would you say it that way? Why would it mean that? It just always seemed to me to mean something different than what everybody says. Okay? Some others say the Shavua lasts only 1,000 years.
Why?
I don't know. That's what they suggest. It's like Chayram Ben Gershon, I guess. But the final and most compelling answer is, there's a few other answers. Second to last answer is, not everybody agrees with Rav Zeira's opinion. Rav Zeira disagreed with Rav Yehuda. So who's to say that this is normal of halacha? There's no psak on it. Which leads us to our final answer. And the final answer is, the bottom line is, you're dealing with an agarita. When's the last time you saw a psak halacha based on an agarita? Especially in contrast to the huge, extensive literature deals with the importance of settling the land of Israel. So you have an extensive set literature. Really, you know, it's like in Kriyat Shema, it's in every parsha in the Torah, it's in all the Shemoneh Esrei, it's in everything. It's everywhere. And then you've got this like teeny little passage in you know, the end, the back end of Masechet Ketubot, between, you know, like three Shavuot. But what do? I mean, we do what we did until we stopped doing it. You say, oh, well, how come you're not making Aliyah? I make Aliyah! Three Shavuot, you know, like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go into the three Shavuot. So, never had to say that until, you know, because it was always impossible. Now that it's not impossible anymore, so then I guess you have to fall upon the Shalosh Shavuot. But the bottom line is, it's an Agarita. Agarita are here to teach us lessons, to give us to transmit values. But they're certainly not here to paskin halacha. Mm-hmm. I think that's the most compelling argument of all. We don't paskin halacha based on a three-line agadita in Shavua. Paskin halacha based on, as the Ramban says, barashtem et ha'arat yishavtem ba. Like, you know. So, and the Rambam doesn't include it in the list. There's plenty of good reasons why the Rambam wouldn't include it in the list. But if you want to suggest that the Rambam didn't believe in living in the land of Israel, you haven't read anything that the Rambam writes. Whether it was a mitzvah or not a mitzvah. That's why I always love the discussions. It's a mitzvah kiyumis or mitzvah chiyuvis. Stop. Just stop. At some point I just lost patience for the discussion. Like, should you be here or do not? That's the bottom line. You know what I'm saying? And whether we take it by force or not take it by force, it's here now. So what does that mean? I believe that if you take this Gemara to mean anything, it's not that it takes away from the significance of the state of Israel. The state, not the land, the state of Israel. But that it adds to it. That it grants a certain legitimacy from a spiritual sense of view, a spiritual point of view. And even if you don't think that it has that spiritual significance, you should be here anyway. And that's an argument I think that everybody would agree with. We'll stop.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Yeah.